Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the BW Torch Livecast for Friday, February the 3rd, 2017. I'm Bruce Mitchell, almost a week, Torch Senior Columnist, almost a week after the Royal Rumble, with several intriguing things coming out of that, including the curse of number 30. How many people thought that Roman Reigns coming out at number 30 of the Royal Rumble ruined what had to that moment been a very good show? I don't know. There were definitely people that were like that. We'll be joined. Travis Bryant is on his sabbatical, but he'll be back soon enough. And I'll be joined by Rich Fan in just a moment or two as we go through this. Of course, you can call up if you are listening live. Someone used to say that you are looking live. 515-605-9345. 515-605-9345. Brett Musburger, you are looking live. The NFL Today, back in the 70s, with Irv Cross and a whole bunch of folks. But anyway, interesting that he's gone off to join. Heard a guy on ESPN say he's gone off to join the Boys in the Desert. So I think a lot of us might be joining the Boys in the Desert for too long. Rich, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks, Bruce. Happy to hear it. I might be a little windy for a second because I'm heading back from a movie and I'm throwing my trash cans back in the garage. So I apologize in advance to any listener issues.
Threw that to you pretty quickly, so I can see why you're in the midst of that. So, being nosy, what movie did you go see?
I went to go see Rings.
Oh, okay. How was it?
Yeah. It was all right. I mean, I saw the first one when I was in college, back when, you know, the internet just got popular and you could download the Japanese version that no one wanted to see and all that craziness. So I just wanted to kind of see how the American version continued the story, and they did a pretty good job.
Okay.
But I'm like the 80s kid that stuck between, you know, these new movies. I feel like I'm the old guy now. It's more CGI than actual, like, jump scares or visual effects.
Right, yeah. So from the visual language you're used to, all that stuff, I completely understand. Being stuck before that. I've said this before, you know you're old when your nostalgia is out of date. Not just, you know, the current times, but your nostalgia is too old. They can't show that. So I'm sure you talked about this with Travis on East Coast Cast on Wednesday. Go ahead and plug all that, but I want to get your thoughts on the Royal Rumble. But go ahead and plug all that. And but before we do that, let me plug this. Listen to Stone Cold Steve Austin and Wade Keller, editor publisher Wade Keller of the PW Torch, go through the Royal Rumble. And Austin's really interesting. Austin has that look, and of course Wade is too. But I mean, it was a very good show. I really thought that, you know, that Austin's dead on what he says for most of it. It's a pretty cool listen.
Yeah, and I would also suggest if people get a chance, I'd even tweeted it to Wade. Listen to the Talk is Jericho from last week with Shawn Michaels. It was supposed to advertise the movie he's in, but he also talked about an issue that's kind of prevalent with what's going on now, where Michaels mentioned when he retired, he had to completely absolve himself of the WWE because he felt an unnatural level of loyalty whenever there were injuries to the roster, and he would get what he called the call, and he would have to come out of retirement, wrestle, and he felt that last time with Undertaker, he had to completely just remove himself. Otherwise, he would never get out.
Yeah, you know, Steve Austin, and I know you know this, has talked about that feeling too, that you know, just the between the crowd adulation and the loyalty and all the rest of the feelings and hitting that high standard in what you do, it's hard to step away from, and it's hard for performers to step away from, and it's really hard for wrestlers to step away from. And those guys did step away, and there's plenty of them that you kind of wish could have or had at the right time. But yeah, that's a really good point. So go ahead and plug the East Coast.
Yeah, absolutely. East Coast is on Wednesdays from 6:30 to, I think Travis has the settings till 8:30 or 9 live, and that'll be him and Cameron Hawkins. And then Travis and I will do the VIP portion from, well, for the listeners it's only seconds, but for us it's typically from 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time till whenever we stop arguing about something. And we usually take emails, calls, about everything. So wrestling, comic books, movies, as 26 year, I think at this point, it might be close. Brian Austin mentions at times it turns into the entertainment close class. But at the end of the day, it's just good banter and a good time. So definitely search for East Coast Cast on Blog Talk Radio. Or if you go to at East Coast Cast on Twitter, you can find out how to get all our delightful presentation.
Cool. So where were you on the Royal Rumble? I mean, the Rumble itself and the whole show. What did you think?
Well, I think, especially when I listened to the review, I think I was more in your camp. I enjoyed the Rumble. I'm always been a big fan of the Big Four. So in particular, this Rumble, obviously it might not be in my top 10, but I thought it was better than average. And with the passage of time, I'm over the fact that Roman was 30, but in the moment, I definitely was very disappointed, annoyed, and in some ways amused, because it just seemed like, you know, Vince just can't let it go. And he figures, you know, I'm going to let this guy go in there. He's going to raise hell for a little bit. He's going to get eliminated, and everybody's going to be so disappointed. And that's not how it was.
Yeah, I mean, once I saw what had happened with, you know, and I'd been tipped off about Randy Orton, and I guess, you know, the finish was out a few days before that, but when I saw that Randy Orton, it was going to be, fans were going to, in the end, choose between Randy Orton and the hated Roman Reigns, and it was going to give a little extra oomph to Orton winning the title, I thought, you know what, that makes sense. That's not a bad move to make. And I like it. I've never trusted them or thought that you should put a lot of, you know, you hear Samoa Joe is going to be in it. It's possible that Shinsuke Nakamura will be in the Royal Rumble. You know, all these different possibilities. And even the, Kenny Omega, because Kenny Omega is possible because even though he's under contract to another company, WWE is not bound by contracts with other companies. It's only other companies and talent that are bound by their contracts to WWE. And a lot of fans' minds, for whatever reason, but you set yourself up for, you know, you just set yourself up where you book this thing in your mind and you have these expectations, and there, you know, and there, it doesn't come in, and they didn't promise you that it was going to, and you're not looking at what happened right in front of you, and you're just disappointed. And there's a lot of that theory that Vince is just sticking it to people to do that. I don't think in this case that was it. I mean, and I also just think I definitely learned from the Daniel Bryan Royal Rumble, the one he was not in, to like look at how they think and what they're doing, not what your expectations are, because they can inadvertently pull the rug out from under you, much less. I just remember, I said this before, I watched that one at the Hooters, and sitting in Hooters and watching this big crowd of people, including a ton of wrestlers, just, you know, get furious because, and I told them, it's like, there's no guarantee he's in this thing. Don't sit there and go, he lost to Bray Wyatt. He's gonna be right back and he'll be in it and win it. It's like, you don't know that. They don't like him. They're not crazy about him. They want to get the focus away from him on someone they're more comfortable with, like Batista. And sure enough, there it was. I mean, it's just, you know, I feel for people, but you have to kind of look at who they are first. And actually, you know, Joe the next night was, except for the unfortunate injury to Seth Rollins, was a stronger debut than being number 30 in the Rumble and getting thrown out by Randy Orton.
Yeah, absolutely. I to kind of saw the whole, I heard a part of what you were saying earlier with the, at the beginning of your Bruce Mitchell audio before, while I was driving, and it's, I think you even wrote an article about this. It's like the McMahons are Mount Olympus, and they're the gods of old, and in this case, he's chosen Samoa Joe as his either demigod or his creation to destroy his old creation. So being a McMahon creation, as we see with interviewee Drew McIntyre / Galloway, who interviewed with Wade yesterday, it has its advantages. You get a lot more chances than you the average other person would, especially when they're deigning to put that on TV and not just something people can allude to in ardent circles or online.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that and television is still the most powerful thing. I mean, that's the, you know, that may change, or it may change in how the television content's delivered. It certainly is changing, but right now, I mean, that's, you know, the television counts for the most. 515-605-9345. We'll be taking phone calls right after this message from the talking head of our choice.
When you're looking to tune in live to the PW Torch Livecast, find out about the next episode, or just catch up on an episode you missed, go to our new website, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can select shows by specific day, specific host, and format, including a grid of our latest interviews and best of selections on the homepage. That is pwtorchlivecast.com, where you can stream our show live and listen to past shows on demand. That's pwtorchlivecast.com.
All right, let's go. I should say the chat room is open. It usually is on Friday night, and I forget to say I opened it, which is kind of dumb. So if you're listening live and you want to talk about this show with some other folks and you know, do comments back and forth, it's a good place to do it. So there's another way to participate with this, and it's a unique feature of the Friday show, from what I understand. So we'll keep it going until we don't. First call is from Darrell from Georgia. Darrell, welcome to PW Torch Livecast. I bet you were going off about number 30.
Tom?
I said, I bet you were doing fine. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, yes. I was at the moment, not really at the moment, about number 30. More about sitting outside and setting up some rules about guys sitting outside for a long time, but not really about number 30.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the real issue was he didn't think it was fair that Jericho got to take a nap, to which I said a heel who's a coward who just got out of a grueling cage match needed to recover and recuperate his powers to be the 61-minute man.
Yeah, you're supposed to be mad when you hear that. How dare he call himself a 61-minute man? He was laying around trying to stay away from conflict. He didn't want to, like, fight anybody because he knew he'd get his ass kicked. I mean, that's what that fits his character. I mean, you know, and that's that heelish character, that funny coward. And so I had no problem with that. And also, they needed a ring general in there at various times with the Braun Strowman show going on and with, you know, kind of the mid-card guys in the middle. I wasn't... It, you know, I think it bothered Wade more. We talked about it on the roundtable with the Royal Rumble roundtable with Todd Martin and Wade and I. And I wasn't, and Travis. I mean, I wasn't bothered by the middle of the show being a lot of mid card stuff because I just knew you couldn't have Undertaker in the middle, you couldn't have Bill Goldberg in the middle, and you couldn't have you had to like just save all that for the end and have and it was sold on seeing a lot of those guys in the ring together, and the Rumble was so I you know it was okay, but Jericho needed somebody like Jericho to kind of set a tone for everybody, including lying down while he set the tone.
Yeah, I understand that, but the difference in that was he wasn't lying down in the corner. He sat outside and watched. He didn't really interact with Braun Strowman to help that middle of the card with mid-carders out. I know they say Bill Heat, but where was the Heat? Who did the Heat transfer to when he was standing outside? And also,
Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no problem. But the announcers killed the 61-minute man thing because they said he broke the record before the third man came out to the ring. So saying that he used all that time standing outside to break that record was null and void by the announcers in the first 10 minutes of the match. So that's what my problem was. It didn't go nowhere. No, it didn't transfer to nobody else. The biggest elimination in the whole Rumble to me and for just building towards it was probably Baron Corbin when he eliminated Braun Strowman and how they made him look for the SmackDown side.
Well, you know, I thought it was kind of a cheat a little bit, but Braun Strowman going out by Baron Corbin, you're not going to see that match for a long time, which meant that you had to get Braun Strowman out. And since he wasn't winning the thing, and no one on the Raw side was really effective against him. And I think that they still have all that to play. So I didn't mind. It made sense to me that down the road, if both of them are built up on separate brands, then you can come back to this later on. Rich?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I thought Jericho, for the most part, did his job. I thought I saw him grab his leg when he first took the powder and was just checking that out for a legit injury. So I wasn't too concerned, but then I saw how long he lasted. I was, you know, I was all for it. I, you know, to Darrell's chagrin, I was very happy about that. And then on the Corbin side, I am a huge fan of Corbin. I think he's wonderful. I thought in NXT, he didn't wrestle well, but when he added the banter of telling former independent wrestlers to go back to a promotion they never worked for, like telling, you know, Austin Aries, I think, in their takeover match to go back to Chikara or something silly like that. That was just a level of disrespect I found personally enjoyed. And then just seeing him with the Rumble lead up, telling The Undertaker on Talking Smack when they mentioned the 29 holes for 29 souls, the world needs ditch diggers. That's just off the cuff good stuff without having a writer fill him with.
It's funny, you know, but it fits the character of a badass jerk. I mean, I like the one where they were going back and forth about Sami Zayn. Was Sami Zayn going to get traded to SmackDown? And he just like deadpans, "We don't need him. We don't want him." And I was like, "There you are." I mean, that's I do enjoy that part of his. I did very much like the back and forth, and Miz held his own with him between him and Miz on SmackDown too. You hope that Braun Strowman's starting to open up, and you're hoping that it'll continue. And I keep saying this over and over again, but I like seeing a big man booked like a big man, like a big man destroyer. And I think they've really done that with him. Now whether he can get enough charisma out of that to push it through, I don't know. But he's better than he was. And then the same thing with Corbin. Corbin was kind of a dud. Kind of one of those guys that just, you know, big and not that interesting, but he's getting more interesting, and you hope he can grow into the character. I mean, I look back years ago at Scott Hall. Scott Hall must have done 10 different characters and was as dull. I mean, including being handed the baton from Hulk Hogan in the AWA, Big Scott Hall. And just didn't have any personality. And finally, he was able to connect with what his real personality was, and he was a star. So sometimes guys grow into something, and you hope that these two will. Darrell?
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, this whole Rumble has something to do with what I thought about Vince McMahon and his booking ways so far lately. And not having maybe one or two guys that's ready to heat up, that might need a push, or the Rumble could push to lead them into the main event scene, or making them even more hotter to catch fire. The people want to watch these guys and lead up to good programming going into the future and the shortcoming. And with Randy Orton winning, and maybe potentially getting into a WrestleMania match against Bray Wyatt, that's rumored. Both of those guys are lukewarm. I understand that Bray would have won the Rumble, then maybe win the title instead of maybe winning it in the Elimination Chamber, and then losing it a month later to Randy Orton. It doesn't seem like something that you would do if you want these people to be hot or considered hot. So not having maybe two guys or maybe even one that's ready, that's people willing to get behind, just when they get that push, they know they'll get behind them then, 2 and 4. That's my whole thing about the Rumble. They have no guys who they can plug and play who's on the edge of getting over and just need that little push, as you can see with the Rumble and with Seth Rollins getting hurt.
Yeah, Darrell, I mean, I think this wasn't – I don't think everything was laid out for someone to come and shoot straight to the top in this Rumble. I would also just say I think that, you know, and I know people disagree with me. Todd Martin did, Travis did, I think Wade did on the roundtable. But there's the thing with Randy Orton and the Wyatt family is gaining some traction. And people are interested in Randy Orton again, and it's starting to, like, pull out, and they want him to get away from it, but they're taking their time back and forth with Luke Harper. Is Luke Harper out? Is he just mad at Orton, but he's still with Wyatt? Who's Wyatt's loyalties is, and what exactly is it that Randy Orton is up to? I think there's a story there that could be told in a very interesting way coming into WrestleMania. Maybe they won't, but this is one where I'm sitting back and watching, and I'm not going, it's not very interesting right now. I mean, it's not very interesting right now, so it's not going to be interesting down the line. I think it has a chance to be good. We'll see, though. Rich, where are you with Orton and the Wise?
I'm definitely with the idea of Orton. I see Darrell's point, and I'll get to that in a second, but I think with Orton, I was very intrigued. I was running when I listened to Talking Smack, and he had a line where he was just talking about, you know, he's happy to win the Rumble, his wife was there, and then in the same vein, he's talking about John Cena, and he's like, well, by the time WrestleMania comes around, I only have one word for him, run. And I think he's really engaged in this. He's not going with the hokey stuff they did with the New Day, we're in the woods, we're the, you know, Manson family, but we also have this supernatural ability to clone ourselves. They're going with, this is a cult, he's in the cult, he's the same person as before, but now he has this quirk about him, and it's a dark quirk, and you don't know where it's leading. I think Luke Harper playing the jilted member, you know, you've seen this in TV, you've seen it in movies, you've read it in books, and just because you know how it ends, you still, as a wrestling fan, I can speak personally on this, I'm very excited to see which way it goes. Does Luke wind up being the guy to pick up the pieces after Randy destroys what's left of Bray? Or does Luke forge his own path and learns from this and becomes his own man? Like this, or does he just sublimate himself and then follow Randy as the new alpha? There's so many different ways they can do this, and I'm very intrigued to see where it goes, title or no title.
Yeah, it's even if you can predict, you know, with a fair amount of certainty what they're going to do, you're still going to see how they do it. And even that could be interesting. And there are possibilities there. I don't know exactly how this is going to go. And to me, there's possibilities that are very interesting. Now there's, you know, that you can drop the ball and, or they can not have thought it through and it not be so great. But I'm more than willing to wait this one out and see, and see where it is. I think wrestling fans too, kind of, I think some fans are looking at it going, you know, Randy Orton won the Royal Rumble. He's evergreen. He's there forever. He's won the Royal Rumble before. He's been in WrestleMania before. He's in the main event. And he's pointing at that flag, that WrestleMania flag. That means he's in the main event. And no, it doesn't. It means he can pick his World Championship or Universal Championship match. The main event is Brock Lesnar versus Bill Goldberg. That is the main event. And so, so saying that this isn't good enough to be a main event really doesn't matter. They've got their ticket selling, intriguing main event. Now, is it going to be a classic wrestling match? No. Is it going to be an exciting spectacle? Could be. Is it going to be a flop? Could be that too. But as far as the atmosphere and as far as those two stars go, they've got their number one babyface. It's amazing to think of in 2017 that WWE's number one babyface is Bill Goldberg. But they've got Bill Goldberg versus their number one heel and their number one star, Brock Lesnar. And that will that carries a lot through performance. Rich, we have another thing I want to talk about before we get to another call. But we haven't talked about this idea of John Cena and Nikki together in a mixed tag for John Cena's WrestleMania match versus versus The Miz and Maryse in a mixed tag and you know, using the Total Divas drama of, you know, will he or won't he ever make an honest woman out of poor Nikki? you know, for WrestleMania. How are you about that? I can see where people be turned off by it. I can see where there's an argument made that it helps to bring in the Divas audience, which is not always part of, or the Bellas audience, which is not always part of the mainstream of the wrestling audience.
Well, I think it's funny because, if anything, I can use my family as the litmus test. When I went to go visit my folks with my son and my wife a few months ago, we watched, I can't remember what pay-per-view it was, from their house, and my dad was aghast that his 35-year-old son is still watching pro wrestling and asked me if I knew it was fake. And I kind of just shrugged him off, you know, because my dad is one to push buttons when it comes to things like that. But the thing that was interesting to me was my wife was remarking to my mom wondering why she knew John Cena, and my mom mentioned she watches Total Divas. Or Total Bell.
Right.
I can't remember whichever show was on.
Right.
And so she remarked, because they live in Tampa, she looked at me and not even ignoring my dad, she punched me in the arm and said, "Why didn't you tell me John Cena lives around here?"
Yeah. John Cena, I can't tell you how many times, more than once I've had this conversation with a woman who's sort of a wrestling fan but is a John Cena fan. And pretty much what they say is, "That's my boyfriend." And like, he has that, you know, he has that link and he has that fan. And I definitely talk to teachers at school who don't watch wrestling. Maybe their husbands do, but they watch Total Divas and Total Bellas. It's a whole different. So if I'm WWE, I am looking for a way to bring that in. And then, you know, it's been interesting to me the last several years that they have just not done a marriage angle. They haven't had a wedding angle in a long time. That used to be something they would go to in the mid card or the top of the card or wherever they could to get a rating. And they stopped doing that. And I'm like, if they're building this and they've got this reality show that built to John Cena, you know, John Cena and Nikki beat Miz and Maryse, and then John Cena, you know, pulls out a little box, that would be quite a WrestleMania moment. It kind of goes against everything that wrestling stands for, particularly in WWE. You know, women are going to stab you in the back. You're better off with your guy buddies. That's always the WWE thing to do. But this one, I think, might be different. And also, it's just like, does John Cena really want to do this? Does Nikki really want to do this? I can only think of one marriage that I've ever heard of that came out of a wrestling ring that lasted, and that was the famous one in Hawaii back it was the late 60s, early 70s. Handsome Johnny Barone got married, and he was with his wife to the day he died. But decades after Hawaii wrestling, 50 state wrestling went out of business. But I mean, most of the time, that's not the greatest, you know. It's not the greatest thing, and not even in wrestling, but in anywhere, to like put that much publicity on your wedding. But anyway, I think it's a thing to do. Let's go to another call, and then I've got another question for you, Rich, in a minute.
Okay.
Oh, well, did you talk about the possibility of the wedding, or did I just start babbling too much?
Oh no, I'm sorry. Yeah, with the wedding, I didn't get a chance. I didn't talk about that yet. The wedding, I just feel like I think most people do, or at least I know how I felt when I proposed to my wife. I was ready because I worked myself up to it. Asked her dad, got that stuff lined up. If Cena is doing this kind of because he's tapping out after however many years they've been together, I mean, if that works for them or that works for her, that's fine. But I would hope this stuff isn't just foisted upon him, because I've watched Total Divas, and his attitude, I know people have rules on reality TV, but he seems hell-bent on being dedicated to himself, his legacy, and being unapologetic about it, which I respect.
Yeah, I do too.
So he's ready to include her. If he's going to do it, that's fine. But if it's just in a promotional sense, he's going to be out of wrestling. I hope he's out of wrestling for a shorter period of time than they're married, because I feel like if this is just a stunt, by the time he retires and fades out of it, he's going to get out of there because he's going to be going nuts.
Right. That's, you would think. So, yeah. We'll see how it plays. And then there's just, you know, getting married for, you know, even a WrestleMania main event, even the publicity that would come out of that, you know, and doing some sort of angle, you know, to go into the next year's WrestleMania or next year's storylines. I mean, that's, you know, you're, to me, you're kind of playing with karma and fire, and I'm not a big karma guy. I mean, I just think you're, that's not the smartest thing to do in certain ways, particularly when you've got, particularly when you're really successful and you don't need it. They would love for you to do it, but you don't need it. And so, anyway, let's go to our friend Kylan in New Jersey. Kylan, welcome to PW Torch Livecast.
Thank you, Bruce. How are you and Rich this week?
Battling through, man.
It was a heck of a week this week, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Always.
So, on to my questions for this week. My first question is on future WWE Network projects. With Wednesday's announcement of Lucha Underground being acquired by Netflix and Triple H's pinch proclivity for tournaments, do you see WWE doing a Mexican tournament later this year? And part two of that same question, since Chris Jericho in fact did not break the all-time Royal Rumble staying power record, do you foresee Rey Mysterio receiving a return phone call for a said Mexican tournament in order to counter Lucha Underground's presence on Netflix if such tournament comes about?
Kylan, you put some interesting things together. I'm going to throw it to Rich first. Rich, what do you think?
Well, first, it's, you know, it's not set in stone. I was listening earlier to, I think it was the Observer Live or something, and they mentioned that, Dr. Lucha mentioned that it's supposed to be 2 or 3 weeks from now, but they're still trying to get the T's crossed and the I's dotted, especially with all the legalities of AAA registering names for, let's see, Pentagon Jr., Rey Fénix, and a couple of the other guys who are trying to depart. That's making a bit of a morass for Lucha Underground because those names, they need to use them. But I think to Triple H's point, I think they would. I think they're going to start with the Asian tournament first or the Japanese tournament, however they're going to arrange it. My money would be Asian, mainly because of the foothold in China they want to do. And back to John Cena, the fact that they had their face that runs the place learn Mandarin on his own just so he can be someone that kind of helps with outreach. And having a son-in-law in Shane that may have failed miserably in that regard with video on demand, but at least he knows the landscape. He can tell him what landmines not to step on. But in terms of Mexico, I think that tournament would be something that should be coming. But I don't know, again, just like with the UK, you risk doing it the wrong way, especially in this political climate. You don't want to risk bringing that many wrestlers to a well-known arena in Mexico, for instance, and then not have the protections in place to ensure that you don't have an incident on your hands trying to get them back out of the country. That would be my biggest concern right now.
There's something to that. I hadn't thought about that, but there definitely is something to that these days. And it's not just the political climate. It's, well, it's the a lot of climate. I mean, I guess it's part of the political climate.
NFL. I think of the same thing with that, because like the NFL is coming to Mexico with the Patriots and the Raiders and someone else. I might have the teams, Raiders and the Steelers. And I follow one of the agents on Twitter, and he's scared to death of his poorest players because regardless of the political climate, Mexico is still a very dangerous place as far as being a tourist, being a tourist with money, being American tourist with money. So those are a lot of things, especially with kidnappings, things like that. You're rolling with a lot of dice that you don't have to deal with in Japan or in the UK.
Yeah, the cartels are very powerful, in a way. I kind of meant that as far as politically goes. I mean, like they in some ways they transcend just the criminality. I mean, even though it's still very much the criminality. I think that you know, Lucha Underground going to Netflix, I don't know that that's the deal that saves them or keeps them going. I'm interested in that next, you know, they've lost millions of dollars and they never really had those revenue streams in place where they could make up that money. And so I'm sure being on Netflix helps, but I would think it's just, you know, you can just go with the catalog of three seasons and have something that Netflix can show. Is it going to mean that they're in the fourth season or something like that? I think WWE would like to do, you know, what they did in the UK and Mexico, and very much like to do it in Asia too. And New Japan encroaching into California and saying, you know, publicly saying they want to fight back against WWE, they want to fight WWE, I think, you know, gives WWE some onus there too. Ray, I know that WWE has wanted Ray Mysterio back, you know, and they wanted to keep him around even when he wanted to be gone for months and months at a time and played a lot of games to do that. I think that, you know, if Mysterio it's a matter of money if Lucha's still paying him and then he's doing other dates and he's making good money and has a good schedule, I don't know that he goes back. If that changes and WWE makes him a good offer for one last run, I could see it, but I don't think he would be a mainstay of a WWE Network tournament. I think that if you bring back Rey Mysterio, he goes on SmackDown, he goes on Raw. And he's a main roster guy. He's not just there to do a tournament that's kind of a niche product for a niche of a niche in on the WWE Network. So, there's a lot of things in play right now with all these different companies and their relationship. And how WWE affects them, you know, how the mothership affects them. And that's an interesting, you know, it's definitely an interesting dynamic. So let's go to, before we go to another phone call, let's take a minute for this, less than a minute for this commercial break.
If you're like me, you've got a list of your favorite podcasts that you listen to throughout the week and also your favorite websites that you listen to throughout the week, but they don't always overlap. But in the case of PW Torch, they do. We hope not only will you listen to the PW Torch livecast every day, but also visit pwtorch.com every day for the latest insider perspective, breaking news, TV reports, live event reports, live pay-per-view coverage, exclusive editorials, and a wide range of other features. Check it out every day. It's mobile-friendly, desktop and laptop-friendly. Stay up to the minute, stay up to date with pwtorch.com.
Rich mentioned this, but I do want to say too that on Thursday's livecast, we did a show. Did Steve Austin podcast talking about Royal Rumble with Austin, and on Thursday's show he did a livecast with Drew Galloway, who is one of those players in a very interesting place as far as all the wrestling companies go, and a guy who's, you know, recreated and risen in his career by his own recreation from his time in WWE. So interesting conversation there. All right, let's go to Chicago. Chicago, you're up next on the PW Torch Livecast.
This is Boris from Chicago.
Hey, Boris.
I was thinking, how you guys doing on this Friday? Love the cold evening in Chicago. I was thinking when Seth got hurt, I was like, man, too bad Sami Zayn ain't booked where he can step into that slot. You know, much as Stephanie McMahon, the venom that she had for Sami Zayn, that would be a perfect catalyst to step in to that spot against Triple H. You know what I'm saying? Against Samoa Joe. But unfortunately, he's not built correctly. So when a guy go down like that, he's not built to step in. And we see this time and time again with the injuries and into the WrestleMania season, with the injuries, you know, and the people we wishing to get back, look at the struggle versus what they want to put on TV versus what we want. What do you guys think about Sami Zayn?
Yeah, I'm always a little when someone says, what do you want? I'm always a little reticent with that. But let's talk about, I mean, it brings up what I wanted to talk to you about, which was, Rich, which was, you know, Seth Rollins is hurt. Whether or not he's going to be ready to come back for WrestleMania, we don't know. But let's just take him out of the equation for WrestleMania, or, you know, or even for the next pay-per-view. Who steps into the breach here against Samoa Joe? Who steps into the breach here against Triple H? And I should say that on Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, which has been recorded, is up both, I believe both hours, I know both hours have been recorded with Wade Keller, but I believe both of them are up for people to listen to. We talked a lot about this situation. But, Rich, what do you think about who would you like to see in that spot, Fastlane and at WrestleMania, if Seth Rollins is not available?
Well, I would say I would let you know first that they both are up. I only listened to the first 5 minutes of the first one, so hopefully this doesn't overlap with what you said on one of the two recordings. But I have three people, two that I would prefer and then one that I think Vince would look at. The first would be a person like Drew Galloway, someone you could bring in that hasn't been touched by the taint of the WWE for so long. You can bring him in onto the same premises he went around the indie scene with My Love, the promos that Triple H, to be honest, kind of stole when he returned last year. Where I love wrestling so much that I'm going to do these things for you and yada yada. And he could say, I was one of those failed projects of your father, and now I'm here to prove that, you know, this chosen one went out, found his own path, and your way isn't the way. And, you know, that could be from an angle of Vince hires him to kind of stir the pot, or Stephanie mistakenly, or Mick Foley. Blame Mick Foley. Bring him in, and Foley was stupid enough to rehire this guy who he heard his promo and fell in love with him and thought he'd give him another chance before SmackDown could. The second person would be another NXT person. I'm presuming not necessarily Shinsuke, because that ship is hailed. I would say again the other chosen one in Finn Balor if he's healthy, and same sort of gimmick. You have another guy with a face that's been chosen as another chosen one, but he never really sealed the deal as far as the evil that Kevin Owens has kind of turned to and all that good stuff. And then the final person, which is the one I think Vince may get tempted by, and they will probably try to move heaven and earth to prevent this, they could look at someone like Cass.
Huh.
And say, hey, desperate times call for desperate measures. He's this big guy, and he's tired of, you know, people picking up on his buddy Zoe, and he's tired of bullies in general on the roster. So now he's going to put his big foot in the ring and say, I'm here to say that no one else is getting pushed around by this Jamoke from Samoa or South Central or wherever he's from.
Could be. Rich, I have to say that that was fresh content. I'll say that was interesting. And I don't know that Nakamura comes in right to that position. I could see Finn Balor maybe, but I also wonder about I wonder about that some too. And Triple H in a match with Finn Balor at WrestleMania, that limits Finn Balor, doesn't limit Triple H to me. So it'd be interesting. I don't know. I do wonder whether they finally just pull the plug. I mean, whether they finally just, you know, pull the string and do Shane McMahon versus Triple H. But I just have this sense of they keep those guys apart on television for more than just they're going to build up a match later on. I think there's a dynamic there. And you know, I mean, we know now that it wasn't just that Shane McMahon wanted to prove, you know, to prove his bones to his dad by going out of WWE and making big deals. It was that he had a power play over creative over Triple H and Stephanie McMahon that did not come to fruition. And that, you know, in a family, that's tough. I mean, even a family like that. And, you know, it was just really interesting to me that you never saw, you know, from the time Shane has come back, we have never seen him and Triple H share anything. They've kept them, you know, they just stay away from each other. And that might be, and while that might be politically and family a good thing, it also speaks to the fact that, you know, the real tension might be something that WWE and the McMahon family wants to take advantage of and try to turn into a WrestleMania match, particularly now that they sort of need that. So, but yeah, you're, I like the Drew Galloway. I really do. I like the Drew Galloway scenario that you laid out for, you know, for sure.
And he looks like someone different. I think I had written into Wade, and he was kind enough to ask Drew my question. When I saw him years ago as Drew McIntyre, he just looked out of place as the person that Vince would choose as his chosen one. The body and the person he grew into looks like a wrestler. The Drew Galloway is the wrestler I think Vince McMahon would want. A big dude, like he said, he's like 6'6", 6'7", in boots, bearded. He's got about 40 pounds on him now. He looks like a man. And that accent or no, he's like, and no offense to him, but he's like a better Sheamus. He's exactly what they want. If he's a foreign wrestler, he's foreign enough where he's mysterious, but he's not too foreign where you don't understand him.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's something that's there. It plays into going international. It plays in what they're looking for these markets. And it's very hard to get dropped by WWE or drop yourself from WWE and come back, but they've changed some of those rules. You know, you look at some of the wrestlers that they push now that they wouldn't have pushed in the past. You know, the obvious example. So,
I was just going to say, he mentioned, I was listening to the Talk Is Jericho podcast, and Kevin Owens mentioned that he wrestled a match against Johnny Gargano at PWG, and Regal was there. And Triple H had sent Regal to scout him and not Johnny Gargano because they already knew about him. And the first thing I thought of when listening to Wade's podcast with him is, well, shoot, he was tag team champions with Johnny Gargano and Evolve. You can't get closer to the teat of WWE than that without being in the company.
Right.
So I would assume they see him even outside of the TNA as someone that's become a legitimate player. And all of these companies, as soon as he comes in, instantly give him their championship and make him the face of the company. That is something that shouldn't be understated.
Yeah, I think you've got something. Let's go to our friend Daniel from wherever it is, some sort of Midwestern state. I get confused. I think it's Kansas. Daniel, welcome to the Midwest Podcast. Yes.
Hey, thanks, Bruce. Yeah, we're back in Kansas here. I have a kind of superfluous question and then a more serious question. What do both of you guys think of Wade's language on the commercial there, calling these things live events to the house shows? I feel like maybe he's slipping into some of the Orwellian tricks that that WWE would prefer.
I think you're very much onto something, and I think that the FCC should be contacted about it. You know, I think that, you know, I'm not saying that there should be a coup here at the Torch, but you know, some adjustments are in order. So I appreciate that you pointing that out. I'm still bothered by the idea that there could be three different flagship shows. There's only one flagship. Now, you can argue which one it is. I'm all fine for, I mean, you can make that argument. Okay, make the argument. But you can't have three flagships. You know, when the pilgrims came from wherever they came from to discover a land that people are already on, that not all three ships were the flagship. One ship was the flagship. I forget which one it was. The Santa Maria, maybe. But you see my point. Yeah, okay. All right, yeah. You get my point here. So, yeah, these are things that need to be talked about a lot more.
I think so, and we need to point out these things away. I mean, at the end of the week, we're both still teaching. That's impressive. That's good. On a secondary note, thank you. I got Rich there. Okay. On a secondary note, I was waiting and waiting and waiting to see Samoa Joe and WWE. And are we just going to wait now again because he has no opponent? I kind of hate for spoilers in some ways, but I feel like they already had him not really in the WrestleMania plans anyway. And maybe I wouldn't be shocked if they just see him completely the wrong way. I like the fact they introduced him in kind of a high-level point, but at the same time, in my opinion, he should be ahead of like a Braun Strowman, who they've done a good job pushing, but I'm a little impatient at this point.
Well, I mean, you know, and the guy's closing in on 40, and yeah, that makes sense. Rich, you want to comment on waiting for Joe?
Yeah, and to be honest, Daniel, here's where I am. I'm pretty jaded at this point. So, I enjoy wrestling. I get my kicks just like anyone else. But when it comes to these sorts of things, I can see down the road a little bit and get a little queasy. So for me, if they're going to build Joe up, he's just probably going to be laid at the feet of Roman Reigns in about 4 months as the latest killer he can put down as champion. So I'm good with him beating up on X3MB members or random guys from the street that, you know, he'll beg Triple H for, you know, give me a tune-up because I'm getting crazy back here not killing anyone. So I'm good with those for a little bit. And hopefully that turns into, I would hope, a world title run down the road. But right now they're still in the Roman Reigns business, so I only presume he's going to be the next dragon to be slain.
Well, let me ask you this. I tweeted about this on Twitter, which I think is what you do on Twitter. But, all right, so Monday, Triple H brings in Samoa Joe to do a hit to get rid of Seth Rollins. And Samoa Joe gets rid of Seth Rollins. Mission accomplished. Doesn't he go back to NXT?
Oh, God. I'll say one thing.
I think the next one would be Roman, I think. He's like, hey,
well,
this guy's
I mean, yeah,
on my side.
Bring him in for Roman. What? You know, I mean, you know, you're an economics professor, Daniel, so you know a lot about organized crime. I mean, isn't that what they do? They bring the hitman in from another place. He does the work. He gets his work done. He gets his wet work done. Then he goes back to where he came from, and you don't hear from him again. You don't keep him around. You don't keep him around the territory.
You know, that seems more familiar to me from Godfather than my experience, but that does make sense. And I'll be honest with you, the one thing I groaned about is, because of the things Rich brought up, I wanted to see Joe on SmackDown. So maybe that happens eventually, and they find a different role for him, because I think he'd have more room there and have a better opportunity. So, I don't like the idea that Rich is seeing more clearly than I am, I'm afraid, about the future.
Yeah, I'm
Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to play with what Bruce was saying. If he is going to be the hitman, what better way than to screw up your brother-in-law's company by sending him over to SmackDown and tuning up John Cena or a couple of his SmackDown faces?
There is that. All right, I'm going to take a really big chance right now. I'm going to take a deep breath, and we're going to call Australia.
Oh, boy.
I believe this is Jason from Australia. I hope it goes all right. Jason, welcome to
DW Torch Live. Of course it's me.
Yeah. Welcome to DW Torch Live.
Why wouldn't this go okay?
Well, apparently, you people are hard to deal with.
Okay. Hey, listen, that's just... I know where you're going with this, but don't worry. That's just phony, unimportant international relations. I'm here to talk about the real stuff, the important stuff, which is pro wrestling. That stuff just,
God,
you know, that's nothing. That's just international relations.
Yes, God bless you.
Jason, I was worried that we're going to have a war started because your toilet's flushed the opposite way, so thank you for that.
Yeah, I tell you what, that Simpsons episode about 20 years ago, they got a lot of people riled up down here, you know, so that's an interesting point you bring up. But yeah, I think we're the only country that's been with you since World War One, so I think it's going to take a little bit more than, you know, an angry phone conversation to eliminate our great alliance that we have, you know. And if anything, I think that the government, your government, can point to our relation that we have here on PW Torch, and if they can use that as an example, I think everything will be okay. So I think there is hope.
Well, we're here for world peace. I think particularly the Friday live cast, but every other day of the live cast too, we're about peace and love and understanding and fighting. Fighting's part of it too. So, and promos.
So having said all that, I want to talk about a few things. I want to talk about the Royal Rumble. Okay, so I tweeted you this. Everybody loved the AJ Styles John Cena match. I enjoyed it, but not as much as everyone else, because to me, the near falls took me out of the match. Now, I know people said that they built to it nicely, like you said, Bruce, and a lot of people like the excitement. I'll just give you my point of view, then you can debunk it or whatever. I guess what put me in a bad mood for the Cena-AJ Styles match was the ridiculous near falls in the Kevin Owens-Roman Reigns match, surviving the frog splash through the table. The brass knuckles, the stunner, Roman Reigns just, you know, everything he was just able to kick out of. To me, it just looked ridiculous. He gets to AJ Styles, John Cena. I guess I'm from the school of thought where I grew up, like I said last week, I was a big Jake the Snake fan. So one of the reasons why I liked him was because of the Snake, but also the DDT. I just loved that when he hit the DDT, it didn't matter who you were out for at least 2 to 3 minutes. And to me, that's the intriguing part, is leading up to the finisher, not if you can kick out of the finisher. And then you see, and I tweeted this to you on SmackDown, and you actually wrote back to me saying, actually, so Cena was able to survive multiple finishes that AJ Styles was able to give him, but one RKO in a 10-minute match was able to lay him out. This is the disconnect for me. And I'm not saying this because I'm thinking too hard or, you know, you're looking into this too much, just be entertained. But I don't understand how he can survive all those multiple finishes in the AJ Styles match, but one RKO on a SmackDown can lay him out. Can you explain that to me? And can you see where I'm coming from?
I do see where you're coming from, particularly just the memory of, because watching with my friends, we were laughing at the brass knuckles. When Roman Reigns kicked out of the brass knuckles, we got a kick out of that, and not in the way they meant for us to get a kick out of that. It was just like, oh, come on, he just got hit with brass knuckles, I think twice. Like, you know, and he's, yeah, you know, he's kicking out, what the hell? So, you know, that's, I mean, it was funny in a bad way. And I think it also speaks to WWE has this style that they stick to that's the right way to wrestle. And so you do get duplication. And I think that's a bad thing on the same show on big matches where the kick out style, you've seen it in a big match an hour or so before, and then here's this other big match and you're doing it. That said, I thought I very much thought that Cena and Styles did a better job of pacing that out and selling it and just executing near falls to where you're like, that's it, and then it's not it. And then I just point to this. You know, I can get tired of something myself, but when it builds that crowd excitement and it works, I have to go, well, that worked. And that's what it did. Is it the exact style that I'd like to see on every show? No, but this time, the style, and even with what had happened, you know, with Owens and Reigns, the style really worked. And as I said, people hadn't heard me say this yet. I thought it was John Cena's best match that I'd ever seen. And AJ was tremendous in it. Rich?
Well, one of the things for me, and I think Jason can respect this a little bit. First, with the Randy Orton thing, I think they've sold the RKO as the DDT of this generation, especially with the RKO out of nowhere viral videos. So I thought the 10-minute match RKO was believable because of the match he had just gone through on the Sunday before with AJ. And then as it pertains to AJ and Cena, yeah, I thought that was one of his best matches I've ever seen. And then when I saw online various wrestlers mentioning, you know, Cena's basically learned to trust AJ, and a lot of what they did was because of AJ's influence on the match. Like, the transition to the finish, as soon as it happened, I mean, you could look on my Twitter and see it. I said, that's a Japanese finish. I've never seen Japanese finishes in the WWE before. Hitting the attitude adjustment, rolling through, and then hitting it again, that was something that was, to me, spectacular. As soon as I saw it, I was like, this guy's done. It's over. And I really appreciate that AJ, for all of our talk the last few months even, of how the WWE wants to be the McDonald's of pro wrestling, he's bringing a little bit of Wendy's into the McDonald's. Maybe he's sneaking it in the McDonald's fry bag, but he's sneaking a little bit of that Japanese style into the WWE, which I think can be a good thing.
Yeah, I can buy a good bit of that. I think also, if you, whatever the finisher is, if you have that finisher that always works, like the DDT always works, and you have all these other finishers, they have too many finishers. There's too many finishers used as transition moves, and they all look devastating. And yet there is that thing of, why does the RKO out of nowhere work every time when six or seven other of these spectacular finishes look like they devastated the guy and he kicks out anyway. There's something to that in the, definitely in the macro sense. But Jason, you want to come back and comment?
Well, that's my point of view, is that you have the ability to, you're creating your own universe and you're telling the audience, you can make any move seem spectacular. I mean, there were a time where they were doing slow-mos on, say, a back body drop, right? And, you know, you hit the canvas and it looks devastating. You know, 99.9% of the audience hasn't wrestled before, so they don't really know what hurts. But if it looks like it hurts, you have the power to make us believe any particular move can be devastating. A lot of the moves that Kevin Owens hits look devastating. When he hits that frog splash, I don't care who you are, you shouldn't be kicking out of that, let alone if you go through a table. You know, by Roman Reigns, he can survive that. It doesn't make sense to me. I guess, look, it's a personal taste point of view. I like leading up to that finisher and you're doing everything you can to stay away from it as opposed to hitting it and seeing whether you can kick out. Now, Rich, I don't watch a lot of Japanese... Well, I don't watch Japanese wrestling, not because I'm not a fan of it. I don't go out of my way to see it. But if you're saying that AJ Styles has brought that type of style to the WWE, to me that just makes common sense. I mean, think about it. If you hit your finisher on someone and they kick out, well, you hit it again and then you hit it again. I mean, to me, that's bringing a realistic approach to WWE wrestling as opposed to hitting a finisher, the guy kicking out, you looking shocked, not going back for another pin. That's ridiculous to me. So if he's going to make things seem more realistic, and that's what the Japanese guys are doing, then I'm all for that, because to me that just makes common sense.
Oh yeah, one thing I'll do after we're done with the live cast, I'm going to send you a couple of videos online of one of my favorite Japanese wrestlers, which is Minoru Suzuki. He's an ex-MMA fighter who also pro wrestles, so his style is completely different than any other pro wrestler. When you try to Irish whip him in the beginning of a match, he doesn't move. Because he's like, you're not going to Irish whip me. Or he'll turn it into an armbar, or he'll transition into something else. You have to beat the crap out of him to even get him to kind of give on moves. And so, obviously, you can't do that with every wrestler in the WWE. But I noticed, even watching on the network, a guy like The Undertaker, when he gets you in the corner, back in the day, he'd do the leg stretch, put it to your throat. Nowadays, he wraps your near arm around the rope and then hits you with the soup bone because you can't defend yourself. Those are logical things to add in, but I don't think too many, and this goes back to a Wade point, I don't think too many wrestlers think about their moveset in terms of logic and flowing into each other. AJ does. Cena does now. But I don't think Roman, for instance, the Superman punch, drive-by, what's the other one he does? Superman punch, drive-by, Black Tiger bomb, back, neck, and then he hits you with a spear and a Superman punch. He needs to kind of figure this out in a way that's going to make him more feared than just, oh, God, here comes that punch that he does 8 times in the match before. It's kind of like a super kick party with punches.
Yeah, very interesting conversation, Jason. I appreciate the call, as always. And Rich, thank you for adding what you add. And very interesting conversation at the end of the show. PW Torch livecast listeners, thank you for listening. Lots of post-Royal Rumble audio to listen to, including lots of people like the Roundtable, Travis and Wade and I and Todd Martin right after the show with a long, deep analysis of all this stuff. So, Rich, I will see you next week, and I you know, tell your wife I said hello. What is it, about 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon? I'll be on her side, and you know, you need to be on our side. That's just not right. I mean, hometown or not.
Well, this is Bruce. I'm treating tomorrow like Lenny and the of Mice and Men. I'm just looking for the rabbits just to get this over with.
Well, I thought, man, I was right there with you guys the other night. I mean, I thought they're gonna pull something off on the Tar Heels. So you know, it's not like it's without hope. And God, it's gonna be you know, it's gonna be a zoo, and it's gonna be. A lot of pressure will be on Duke, because if that team doesn't respond to Kay coming back, if they take a step back after they've taken taken several steps forward, it's going to be, it could be a disaster. So that's going to be quite the game. That'll be fun.
Well, everybody, what is he going to take away from him at this point? He already took away the outfits and the gear in the locker room. Is he going to take away the Chick-fil-A on the way home? Like, what the heck?
Yeah, oh, I know. Yeah, what do you do? I mean, that's the you know, the GOAT comes back. So, you know, I mean, Cameron will be on fire, but it'll be, you know, they got to play defense again like they did with Notre Dame. So, well, you know, we'll see. What a year! I mean, this has been the craziest year for Duke basketball up and down I've ever seen. So, hopefully tomorrow will be another crazy. I'd like to just see everything. I'd like for you to be unhappy and your wife to be happy and just go like that. But I wouldn't bet the farm on it. I wouldn't bet the farm on it. I'll put it like that. So, anyway, Rich, appreciate the help, and we'll be back. If you're a VIP member, listen up for Wade Keller Daily Audio and Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, which is already up for 2+ hours, about 3 for VIP members.
If you're a fan of the PW Torch livecast, you might want to consider a PW Torch VIP membership. When you do that, you get access to an exclusive RSS feed of not only ad-free, plug-free versions of every single PW Torch livecast, but also over 50 other VIP exclusive podcasts per month, including the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline. I also host 3 other flagship VIP exclusive podcasts: The Midweek Fix with Todd Martin, The Weekend Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, each about 2 hours in length, and the post pay-per-view roundtables with the 1 hour analysis of every WWE pay-per-view and some other ones too. Also, ad-free access to PWTorchVIP.com, and that is mobile-friendly and PC and desktop-friendly. And also access to almost 3 decades of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, dating back to the late 1980s, over 1,400 back issues, with my pay-per-view reports on every single pay-per-view match since the late 1980s, with star ratings and match descriptions, roundtable reviews from the staff on every pay-per-view, cover stories on the biggest story every single week in pro wrestling, march through them as a VIP member 1 week at a time, read our exclusive Torch Talks with pro wrestling's biggest names, hard-hitting editorials, backstage tidbits you will not hear anywhere else, and much more. It's all available. Check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Exclusive podcasts, exclusive new newsletters every week, ad-free access to our website, and access to 28-plus years of archives. It's all waiting for you if you go VIP. Find out more details, a checklist of all the benefits of being a VIP member, along with testimonials from current members and a sign-up form that's mobile-friendly. Takes about 90 seconds to sign up. Go check it out today, pwtorch.com/govip.
Yeah.